Atalanta set up the derby of all derbies. They will meet Milan in the final four of the Champions League.
Hello and a very warm welcome to another episode of the Fixture Congestion Podcast. Today I am very glad to have two guests on who are big names in the footballing community and who I followed for a long time. And they will help me ascertain and assess
today with me,
the future
I have a
of
very
two clubs
special guest
who are at the crossroads.
And the person
without further ado,
I can only
let's just get into
as
it.
An august footballing institution. Football Daily's Mr. Doogie Critchley. Hello, Doogie.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on. What a kind invitation. Yeah, it's great to be here. We've actually been talking about this podcast for a little while on Twitter, discussing various topics. And we've been chatting on Twitter for a few months now, actually. You are almost as big or obsessive about football as me, maybe even bigger. So I'm sure this will be an interesting chat.
I love to find fellow anoraks and football obsessive people. And since you are strapped for time, we will dive right in. Today's topic is Inter and how to fix them. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, on the surface, they're fifth. They're in the Coppa Italia semi-final. And they're in the UCL semis. Looking back on their past when they weren't getting Champions League football and the club was in turmoil, things are looking pretty good. But as you and me both know, it's just like that apple who's nice on the outside but rotten on the inside. And I want to start with their main downfall, and it's the ownership situation, right? So Steven Zhang is the current owner, and he's the son of the founder of the Suning Group. And if anyone knows anything about Chinese football, they also have a team over there, Jiangsu Suning, who I think now is folded. Doogie, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's correct.
And obviously, they took a massive hit over the pandemic. Added to that is Xi Jinping moving away from football. He actually issued state orders for new investors to stop looking at football. And this puts Inter firmly in the shop window. Doogie, are they an attractive club for a possible investor?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there's so many layers to that question as well, because as you say, on the surface, things don't look too bad. Their results on the pitch this season have been pretty inconsistent in the league, but they've done really well in the cup competitions, of course, getting out of that group with Bayern and Barcelona, then beating Benfica in the quarterfinals and getting past last 16 as well to set up that clash of the Italian giants, the Milan derby in the semi-finals of the Champions League, which I think everyone's really, really excited for. But if they don't make the Champions League through qualification for Serie A, which doesn't look as likely now, Juventus have potentially temporarily or fully had their points deduction suspended or removed for financial irregularities or alleged financial irregularities. That means that it looks like one or potentially both the Milan clubs might miss out on Champions League qualification through finishing in the top four of Serie A. Now, I was reading a report on that yesterday, and supposedly the impact of that is a loss of around 25 million euros. Now, you would normally expect that to be a lot more, but because they've made it so far in the semi-finals of the Champions League, that's compensated for some of the loss, of course, as well. And the overhanging issue with the Suning Group and Steven Zhang, as you say, is that they took out this enormous loan from a financial asset management company called Oaktree Capital, which has to be repaid in June 2024 or by June 2024. And that was 275 million euros or 245 million pounds. So that has to be repaid. Now, the Suning Group are looking to sell Inter Milan, and they've they've set a valuation of around 1 billion euros, which is an enormous amount for a club that hasn't actually re-established itself back at the top end of Italian and European football for that long. It wasn't that long ago that we had the sort of banter era, etc., for both Milan clubs. So it feels like the club is struggling to repay the loan that they took from Oaktree Capital. And if they don't repay their loan, Oaktree Capital will assume overall control of Inter Milan, whether they like it or not. And that means that the chance of them getting investment this year is pretty slim, to be honest, because most investors will look at the situation and think, look, Oaktree Capital aren't known for running football clubs. They don't want to run this football club long term. They'll likely put it up for sale and at a lower price than the 1 billion euros that Inter are asking for. So basically, they're not going to have much opportunity to sell the club and repay the loan. So it looks like Oaktree Capital will take full control, and in which case they'll then sell the club for considerably less. So Inter then have a situation where they need to get some of this money created through selling assets in their playing squad, which I think we'll come on to in due course. So it's a bit of a financial mess.
Since you mentioned the money part of it, I recently read in the an article from The Athletic that their total debt, it wasn't formulated as that in the article. It was named as liabilities, which I guess, I'm assuming it's debt, is at about 871 million. So that 270 million is just a chunk of that that needs to be repaid now. And I'm guessing Suning is taking Milan, AC Milan, as a template, which went for, I think, 1.2 billion. So they're thinking, oh, right, just another Milan club. But the main sticking point is that it's going to be basically 2 billion with all those debts added on. And at the same time, people who have 2 billion, I'm guessing they have a bit more and they could go for clubs like Manchester United and Liverpool, who are also on the shop window and sort of take away the interest from Inter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's loads of clubs that could be looking for investment in the next few years. We've seen the financial disparity created by the pandemic and the way those leagues are run against the Premier League and the rest of Europe. So loads of clubs around Europe will be looking for additional investment to try and make themselves more competitive as they still recover from that COVID era. Another concern is the sort of stadium situation, which continues to sort of overhang the entire operation at Inter. So loads of Italian clubs, if you're a fan of Italian football, you'll no doubt know this, but loads of Italian clubs don't actually own their stadiums. I think it's only Atalanta, Juventus and Udinese that own their stadiums. So that means that every other club rents their stadium from the local government or the town, which really affects the amount of money that they can make from ticket sales, merchandise, etc. And the San Siro or the Giuseppe Meazza, depending on whether you're an Inter fan or a Milan fan, is no different. They don't actually own the club and they've been thinking about redeveloping this iconic stadium for years. You know, about 100 years ago or so, even 50 years ago, the San Siro was a real emblem and a stadium that everyone looked up to around Europe. And it's still so iconic and, you know, it will almost never be recreated in terms of its grandeur, splendor, iconic status. But it's now not really fit for two, you know, European giants to be slugging it out there every season. Basically, the way they built the tiers of the San Siro, I think they built them about 50 years apart. I think maybe in 1926, just in the 50s, and then in 1990 for Italia 90. But because those tiers were built by different architects at different times, there's not that much connection between them. And supposedly they're missing out on huge financial and business opportunities inside the San Siro. Now, if you take the example of the Spurs stadium that was built relatively recently for a cost of, I think it was £1 billion in the end, that stadium was built with, you know, very much an Americanized commercial eye to it as well. How much can we maximize the amount of revenue made, the ticket sales? You know, it's got the longest bar in Europe. They were really thinking ahead and basically trying to make it as an American experience as possible going to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And it has widely been acclaimed as the best stadium in the world. The San Siro feels miles behind that. And whilst Inter and AC, or Inter and Milan, I should say, definitely don't call them AC, they absolutely hate that. They've been looking to redevelop the San Siro for years. Their plans haven't really come to fruition. There's been various delays, both at national and local government level. It's just seemingly not really getting anywhere, even though they had the idea of continuing to share the stadium and a cathedral is what they called it, the new design. That hasn't really got off the ground yet. And the other issue is that the San Siro is due to host the opening of the Winter Olympics in 2026, sorry. So they don't want to make any wholesale changes to the San Siro or not have the option of hosting that opening for the Winter Olympics at the San Siro. So that's a further delay. So a potential revenue stream or something that would made the club more attractive to potential buyers in a new stadium, in an amazing, you know, very popular tourist destination with two historic clubs, doesn't look like it's going to be done before the sale goes through either. So selling this club is becoming even harder.
You've talked about the issue facing Italian clubs as a whole with their stadiums. The thing is, because of the bureaucracy of Italy and because they are owned by the city council, which makes money off of them, these city councils are actively being finicky and niggly, and they're always trying to delay the construction of new stadiums. This is what's happening with Roma right now. And this is also what's happening with the San Siro, because the head of the Milan area, I guess you could call it, he's not a mayor, he's like a bit higher, has said that he promises that the stadium will still stand in time for those Winter Olympics, and is now actively trying to pander to the fans' heartstrings, we can call them, in order to keep this historic stadium alive. Now, I am a total football romantic. I want to see the San Siro still live. Do you think, or do you want us, the San Siro, to keep on existing?
It's difficult. I mean, it's still a stadium that I haven't managed to visit, and I'd absolutely love to before it was knocked down or redeveloped, etc. But from what I've read and what I've heard, the concourse is really not fit for two clubs of that stature. It's actually quite dangerous in parts, the way it's slightly falling apart, and they're just not maximising the opportunities. So if it means that Inter and Milan can continue to grow and re-establish themselves at the forefront of European football, then I think it might be a necessary evil, really, to either destroy or redevelop the stadium, as painful as that will be for fans of both Milan clubs.
One last thing I want to mention about the stadium is Milan are actually striking out on their own, and they're thinking about building a stadium just for themselves, mm-hmm. and leaving Inter behind because of their debt issues. And we've covered the ownership, which is at the top. We've covered the stadium, which is around the pitch. And now we'll go into the pitch and the issues facing Inter there. Because in a recent game against Spezia, their starting 11 had an average age of 31. Mm-hmm. And that is wild, in my opinion. And I guess, you know, starting ages, especially in Italy, they tend to be a bit older. And if something like half of your players is 20 or 28, that would be perfectly fine. But this squad is aging really fast, and they're also out of contract this summer. So what I would like to do is tell you the names that I found out will be out of contract, and I'd like you to tell me if you'd keep them, if you would coax them into signing a new deal, or just biting the bullet and letting them go. And we'll start with Handanovic. Would you keep him as a backup?
I mean, I think they'll have other priorities than goalkeeper this summer. So, and he's obviously been in a leadership position in the past. He's a club legend for his work, particularly in those dark times. So, I mean, I could potentially keep him. I don't think it's a disaster if he goes either. I think there are upgradable backups on him. But I think they're going to have bigger issues around the squad. So maybe for now, I'll say just throw him another year.
Right. A bigger name, and a quite important one, in fact, even though his performances have dropped off recently, is Stefan de Vrij.
Yeah, I would definitely get rid of Stefan de Vrij. Unfortunately, I mean, I think he's been an amazing servant. He was brilliant for Lazio before joining Inter. I mean, particularly in that title-winning campaign under Conte, he was probably one of the most underrated defenders in Europe, but his performances have really slipped. And Acerbi's now, you know, been equally as good, if not better than him this year. So I think Stefan de Vrij, it's a shame that they didn't sell him when they could have, because he's out of contract now anyway, so they're not going to get any money for him. But yeah, you could have at least got 40 million euros for him a couple of summers ago. So they've really, that's a massive blot on their copybook for me.
I'm going to get to the other blot and to Acerbi in a minute. I just want to ask you, isn't he good just as a body to fill in the numbers? Has he become that bad?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, yeah, as we say, Acerbi's obviously on loan. D'Ambrosio could leave as well. He's out of contract. So, and Skriniar's already going. So they are really short of centre-backs, and maybe it's not the market or the time when you've got these issues, financially or otherwise, to be looking to sign 3+ centre-backs this summer, particularly when I don't think the standard of centre-back at the lower to middle end of the price range is particularly high right now. Either because, you know, they're not going to be able to sign a 50 million euro centre back unless they get rid of Bastoni, I think, which you just don't want to do, ideally, with all these other centre backs already leaving. So maybe they keep De Vrij for another year, but I do think his performances have dropped off so severely that it really wouldn't be the end of the world to completely rebuild that defence.
So, as you mentioned, D'Ambrosio is leaving as well. He's 34. I think we can do without him.
Mm-hmm.
But another one who I would have loved to see stay is Acerbi, despite his age, because he's been brilliant. Do you think Lazio would accept another loan, possibly, or a reduced fee?
I mean, potentially. I think Romagnoli's been so good at Lazio this year, and they've had a really nice settled defence there. And it's been brilliant. It's been one of the most effective defensive units in the whole of Europe under Sarri, which is great to see Sarri sort of remaking a name for himself at a club where it kind of suits his sort of status and skills, Lazio. But yeah, maybe they'd be willing to give him out another year on loan here. I think it's probably worked pretty well for Acerbi as well. It's, you know, given him a bit of a boost in his sort of standing, I believe, and he's become one of the leaders in this Inter side. So potentially they could get him for another year, but there could be some attractive loanees or sort of low budget centre-backs which you might come into in due course.
Right, and Skriniar, we already mentioned him. That's, I think, one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in the transfer market in recent years. Chances are he'll move away no matter what they put on the table. Another name is Romelu Lukaku, who is returning to Chelsea. What do you make of his situation?
It's a bit of a shame, isn't it? Because it just hasn't worked out for club or for either club, really. It hasn't worked out for either club or the player. So I think Chelsea's idea was, yes, we'll send him on loan this year. Pretty much a nothing deal for them, to be honest. I mean, they got him some of his wages off the wage book. I think it cost, I mean, I've seen various reports on this, but I've seen that it cost Inter around 20 million euros to sign him on loan with the fees and his wages as well, which are absolutely massive. And it hasn't worked out at all. I mean, he scored 2 goals at the weekend against Empoli. I think that was their first win in 6. And those were his first goals in open play in the league since August. So it hasn't worked out for Lukaku whatsoever. And it hasn't worked out for Chelsea either, because I think they probably thought, look, if he has another great year at Inter, which he's perfectly capable of doing, he was absolutely sensational under Conte in that title-winning year. I think it was over 30 league goal contributions in terms of goals and assists. He was bullying defenders like we hadn't seen before. And he was, you know, right up there amongst the best forwards in Europe. Unfortunately, the last 2 years have been pretty miserable for him. Obviously, he didn't help himself at Chelsea with that interview. But even this move back to Inter Milan, he's had fitness issues. He had a really poor World Cup, was kind of a figure of fun at that World Cup, particularly in those group stage games where he's just missing numerous opportunities. And I've seen Inter Milan fans on Twitter just say that he's been nowhere near the player that left the club, and it might well be one of those situations where they can't afford him and he's going back to Chelsea. Chelsea, it looks like they might need him, actually, as it's turned out, just because of how their striking issues have gone so far this season. But it really depends on, I mean, it looks like it's going to be Pochettino. It really depends what Pochettino makes of him, on whether there's a possibility of another loan to Inter. But unless it's on reduced financial terms, I just don't see it happening.
Right, and speaking of strikers and low striking options, there's still the situation of Edin Dzeko. Very old, I mean, in footballing terms, of course. Mm-hmm. But should he be kept, again, just as another living, breathing human being to be in the squad?
Yeah, I think it really depends on who they can get in at the sharp end of the pitch. It's probably been one of their biggest issues this year. I don't think they've actually been too uncreative. They just haven't had strikers that have been able to put, you know, the goals in the back of the net consistently. We've seen Dzeko have a few moments. We've seen even Joaquin Correa have a few moments. We've seen Lautaro Martinez have a very strong start to the season as well. But he's a player that just blows so hot and cold. Dzeko, I don't think he's probably going to get a better club than Inter unless he wants to go back to Bosnia or really take a step down. So I think it's been a great move for him. He was underrated for years at Roma. He's popped up with some massive, massive goals, particularly in the Champions League over the last 2 seasons, Dzeko. So I'd like to see him stay for another year, particularly if they're not going to keep Lukaku. It gives a nice foil to the more dynamic, slightly deeper lying Lautaro Martinez as well. So I definitely try and persuade him to stay.
Before we get to the expiring contracts of next year and to the very few sellable assets, I forgot to mention that you are asked by me in this episode to play the role of Simone Criclini, cousin of Simone Inzaghi, who is an advisor to him. So
I like it. I like it.
Get into that mindset. Yeah. Right. So 2024, Bastoni's up, Mkhitaryan is up, and Çalhanoğlu's up. Now, Çalhanoğlu and Mkhitaryan, they are aging. Should they be kept, or should they be flogged this summer to Saudi Arabia, Turkey, anyone who's willing to pay 10-20 million for an aging player.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get that sort of fee for Mkhitaryan in particular, I think you definitely do that. I think Calhanoglu's proved himself in recent weeks that he can play a variety of positions as well. I think the way that Calhanoglu deal has turned out, you know, it doesn't reflect too well on Milan, to be totally honest. I know Tonali and Bennacer have been excellent. You know, they've had, you know, Krunic has popped up with some good performances in recent weeks as well. But the way they were celebrating the fact that Inter moved for Calhanoglu and the way he's actually contributed so many goals again, his set piece delivery is absolutely brilliant. He's definitely a player I'd like to keep around the pitch, particularly with that increased versatility that he's shown in recent weeks. Mkhitaryan, he's had some moments at Inter. He's played a variety of different roles as well. I think he's actually had a really solid career, Mkhitaryan, and could be pretty proud. But if you can get money for Mkhitaryan, you definitely do. And then Bastoni's an interesting one because, as you say, it's probably because they don't own Lukaku anymore. It's probably Lautaro Martinez, Bastoni and Barella as their top most sellable assets. Bastoni has been linked with moves away for quite a while now. And short of a club like Man City coming in for him, and there have been rumours of that, I don't see him wanting to go and swap Inter Milan for Spurs, for example, who, you know, with the way they're trending at the moment, look like they're going to be outside of European football. So I think Bastoni, and he's also made no inclination to go. He's always proclaimed that his love is his first love is Inter. He's established himself as Italy's probably leading emerging centre-back. And he's in a great position to carve out a brilliant career. Still young enough as well that he could get a move in a year or 2 years' time. So I know that they need to make money through sales, but I don't think Bastoni is the guy that I would sell.
And who would it be? Would you sell Lautaro? Would you sell Barella? Or Dumfries? Because he's another name that's been linked with almost every club on the planet.
Yeah, I think of those four, Dumfries is the most replaceable, to be honest, especially with Darmian being a more than capable understudy. I think there's quite a few good, competent right wing backs in around Europe right now. And I think he'd potentially be one that wouldn't be the worst idea to get rid of. The other three are much more irreplaceable. But if I had to sell one of Lautaro Martinez, Barella and Bastoni, I'd actually look to sell Lautaro Martinez. I think you could get 60 million for him, especially with the amount of clubs around Europe looking for striking talent this year. It's slightly annoying that his form has slightly faltered just at the wrong time for any potential market sale. But because Bastoni and Barella are Italian, and people think that doesn't matter, but you know, he's got much, you know, the fans probably relate to those two players even more. I think Barella's been brilliant, particularly in the Champions League and in the last 16 in quarterfinals. And I think he is, you know, one of the most outstanding midfield emerging talents, whereas Lautaro Martinez, with a slightly wayward finishing at times and just his ability to make the easy chances look quite difficult, and occasionally the difficult chances look quite easy, he's just a bizarre player. I think he's more easily replaced. So I think you'd get just as much money for Lautaro Martinez and he wouldn't be as big a loss. So of the three, he'd be the one I'd want to get rid of.
I agree with you on the Lautaro part, because he seems like the sort of player who only works for one team. And as soon as he moves away, he's going to flop. And we're going to see those TikTok videos with scammer gets scammed and 60 million and Lautaro exchanging hands. Right, so we have 60 million. None of that is money we'll see because the bosses are taking it away to pay the loans. Who are we getting in? I've outlined two center backs, two center mids, and three forwards. Now, you've kind of put me on the spot by selling Dumfries because I haven't scouted any right wing back, so I'm hoping you'll help there. I'd like to start with the center backs, and obviously we're looking at the free agent market, which Evan Ndika will be a part of. Can they move quickly enough to lock him down before other clubs get in? Because he seems like kind of an underrated player.
Yeah, I think he's brilliant. I think he's been awesome for Frankfurt for quite a few years now. He's also, you know, if they are going to keep Simone Inzaghi as well, he's very used to a three in the back system. He's left-footed, which is a real benefit as well. And, you know, he's been linked with the likes of Spurs and Barcelona, but Barcelona look like they're going to go and sign Inigo Martinez. That doesn't look like it's quite got over the line just yet, or at least as we record this, but it looks like it's going to be done in the next few days or weeks. And I don't think Ndicka, you know, Spurs, are they that much more attractive than Inter right now? I'm not so sure. So I think that would be a potentially great signing. And then I've got a potential couple of loan deals that I would like to throw forward. One of which being, and I think you might even be able to sign him for a fairly low fee. I think think Man United might just accept a loss on him, and that's Harry Maguire. Inter have been linked with him in the past. I do think, you know, his reputation is probably a little bit unfair. I mean, you look at his work for England over the last few seasons and he's been absolutely brilliant. Look, his confidence in the Man United system is at a pretty much an all-time low. I've heard Man United fans saying that, you know, whilst he was unfairly picked on last year, he's actually just been really below his best this year, and it's really affecting the entire side. So I think Harry Maguire is available this summer, and I think he would be interested in a move to the likes of Inter Milan. We saw the move of Chris Smalling go to Roma, where he's been absolutely loved and feted by the Roma faithful, nicknamed Smaldini. Maybe it's the time for Maguire to make a similar sort of move, and I think he could be up for it.
Right, I was just thinking of the Smalling situation, and I genuinely hope for his sake that he can do that and become, let's say, Harry Maguirazzi, maybe.
I like that. Maguirazzi. Yeah, very good.
Because my heart goes out to him because he is good, but I just don't know what's happening inside mm-hmm. of his head, and mental health is quite overlooked in a player's performances, and also people love to kick people while they're down. Another name I'd like to mention you for the center back situation is I've basically gone on Transfermarkt, set a maximum of 15 million, which I think is a decent amount. Mm-hmm. And I've come across the name Konstantinos Mavropanos, who might be getting relegated with Stuttgart. Do you think he can cut it for Inter?
I like that. I really liked that suggestion. That's a great idea. Yes, I think he definitely can. I think he never really got a fair run of games at Arsenal. He was very young and he was playing in a side that were really struggling under Unai Emery. But he's actually one of Sven Mislintat's real success stories at Arsenal, I think. Or at least he's proven that he wasn't necessarily the wrong pickup with his performances for Stuttgart, because he's been brilliant for Stuttgart. Can be a little bit tempestuous, like he can pick up unnecessary yellow cards. But in terms of a ball-playing centre-back, in terms of someone who's physically dominant, who can cover space as well, who anticipates danger, I think he's got a really big future for him. And yes, it's been a difficult year for Stuttgart, but that's more down to injuries and, you know, managerial turnover, etc., than it is anything on Mavropanos. So he could be a very young, cheap pickup from a club that don't have tons of cash and who actually signed him for a relatively low fee as well. So a small profit on the money they paid for him, I think he could definitely arrive.
Plus, a tempestuous centre-back in Italy. That sounds great.
Match made in heaven, I like it.
Exactly. On to the central midfielders, because also the thing is, we are replacing a whole spine of a team, which is always daunting and which always causes issues. So maybe an experienced head like N'Golo mm-hmm. Kante could cut it in Serie A, especially, you know, with it being a championship for, let's say, older players. The level is a bit lower and a bit slower than the Premier League. But he has huge wages from what I know. What do you think of my suggestion?
I like it. If he's tempted by it and Chelsea want to get rid of him, I think it'd be a nice landing spot for him. I can't see any sort of European giants really moving in for him this summer, given the injury issues that he's had this year. You know, he's been linked with Barcelona in the past. He's been linked with PSG in the past. I think that they probably won't go there, especially if Barcelona looking for a long-term replacement for Sergio Busquets, you know, or Kante, you know, he can play in one of those more advanced roles as well. Doesn't feel like someone you can rely on and does have enormous wages. But if he's prepared to take a pay cut, there has been some speculation that Chelsea are considering keeping him, but I just don't think he'll be part of the long-term Pochettino vision. Having said that, when he has played, he still has popped up with some really good performances, only against Real Madrid a couple of weeks ago. He looked like one of Chelsea's better players. That wasn't saying much, of course. But a move to, you know, Milan, Inter specifically, might prolong his career as well, might get him back to full fitness. So I do like that idea. If it can be done, it just feels like he might just be unaffordable and out of reach for Inter this summer.
The two other mentions that I have are sort of reclamation projects, which might go under the radar because people think they're finished or whatever. The first is Naby Keita from Liverpool, and the second one is Houssem Aouar, who hasn't got his big move and just seems to have caved in on himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Houssem Aouar is a real sad story, actually, because he was being linked with Arsenal and Liverpool, you know, when he was 18 and hasn't managed to kick on. He's had a succession of different managers. There's supposedly been attitude issues, but this is a player that can play in central midfield. He can play off the left. He can play as a 10. Incredibly creative when at his best, and has had some magnificent games for Lyon. I remember in their run to the Champions League semi-finals in 2020, he was quite a key man there, and it just hasn't really worked out for him. So I see that as a really good suggestion. Naby Keita, although I will say on Husamawa, has been linked with Frankfurt and Dortmund in the last few weeks, although I believe Frankfurt have now pulled out. But Dortmund may be considering him in the event that Jude Bellingham leaves. There's also been speculation that Conor Gallagher's on their radar. So we'll see what happens there. In terms of Naby Keita, again, it's slightly more similar to the N'Golo Kante situation, but there's less pluses in, you know, in his on his marking system, if you want, because yes, he is a bit younger, but this is a guy that's already struggling to keep fit as it is. And when he has played for Liverpool, particularly in the last 18 months, I think he's been really ineffective as well. I think it was the 18-19 campaign where he played his most minutes for Liverpool, and it was about 1,200 in the league. This is a guy that's consistently struggled to stay fit, and Inter have been beset by injury issues at different points this season. So doesn't feel like the most reliable guy to go on. So if I was going to go for anyone out of those three, I'd probably go for Husamawa or N'Golo Kante, even though they do play quite different midfield roles. Or I'd potentially look at Yuri Tielemans, who is out of contract at Leicester and who are slowly slipping towards relegation, you know, is picked up his performances again in the last 12 months after a little dip, after so many failed moves, it seemed to affect his concentration. But this is a guy who, at his best, was one of the outstanding midfielders in the Premier League, would easily cut it in Serie A, is at a good age. And I think as a Belgian player as well, or as a player from the continent, will really appreciate the sort of prestige of Inter. So that's someone they could definitely consider as well.
Yes, I was also looking at Tielemans, but in my opinion, he'd be too desirable for other clubs. And also, he's been covered on a YouTube football show. I don't know if you know it. It's Three Guys in a Pub. And sometimes they predict scores. It's really good. You should check it out.
Right. I like that.
Center forwards or general attacking options. Marcus Thuram's contract is expiring, but I'm guessing everyone on the planet will want him. So I have two lesser known ones, I could say. Mm-hmm. We have Roberto Firmino, who is out of contract and is very adept at, let's say, holding up the ball, creating space and creating chances for the people around him, which could be Lautaro. And the new Italian, who's not an Italian and who scored twice for Italy already, I think, Mario Retegui, who could go cheap because he is contracted to a Argentinian club. And a big fee in Europe is very different from a big fee in South America.
Mm-hmm. I like that suggestion. I think he might be quite up for going to Serie A as well if he's going to represent them long term. To be honest, haven't watched a lot of him aside from those goals he scored for Italy in the most recent international break. Sort of came out as a bit of a bolt from the blue that he was even being called up. And I think it says a lot about the standard of Italian strikers right now. It's not, it's way off where it was. Do you remember in the early 2000s when it was Totti, Del Piero, Luca Toni, etc., Inzaghi? It's just miles off there now. And for Ciro Mobley, Raspadori, now Retegui, Belotti, it's just so sad in a way. So they definitely need to, you know, develop who their strikers coming through. Bobby Firmino would be a really interesting pickup. Has been linked with Barcelona in recent days. They are apparently targeting Marcus Thuram, Bobby Firmino, and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who are entirely different players, which always interests me that Barcelona, you know, have them as their top striking talent. If we're being totally honest, if you get offered the chance to go to Barcelona or Inter Milan and you're Bobby Firmino, I think he probably goes to Barcelona, especially given their history with Brazilian players. I remember Coutinho saying that, you know, when Barcelona come calling, you know, you kind of drop everything for them, given their history with, you know, the likes of Ronaldinho and Rivaldo and R9, etc. So, yeah, I can see Barcelona winning the race for Bobby Firmino, but Bobby Firmino is a really good pickup for Liverpool. I think this season, since it's been announced that he's leaving at the end of the year, we've seen some of his best form for years. And this is a guy that once scored 27 goals in a season, in all competitions, that is, as well. And I think it was about 16 in the Premier League that year. I think it was in 2018-19. And, you know, he probably has been pretty underrated his entire career. He's a great facilitator. He's still a good presser. And he seems to get, he seems to have got over those injury issues that were sort of, you know, winding him down about 18 months ago to last season. So I think he'd be a really interesting pickup for Inter. And he, I think he's one of those clever players that just makes players around him so much better.
Right. I know you're playing the role of Simone Inzaghi's cousin and there's family links there, but the club have approached you very hush-hush in the corridors of the club, asking you, should we keep your cousin at the club?
It's a big question. I mean, I feel pretty bad stabbing my cousin in the back. I think he deserves a lot of respect for his performances, particularly in cup competitions. He got them to the knockouts of the last 16 of the Champions League. Sorry, got them to the last 16 stage last year for the first time in years. Outperformed Conte in continental and Coppa Italia competition with ease as well. Is obviously a top manager, you know, nearly won the league with Lazio if lockdown hadn't interfered there. But this year, it's just been so bad in the league. And I don't think they've even played that badly. It's just the results getting over the line, sloppy mistakes at the back, undermined by some injury issues and some poor, poor finishing. I mean, they've lost to Empoli, Bologna, Spezia, Juventus, Fiorentina and Monza. And that's just in 2023. They've lost 11 league games this season, which is as many as their previous three campaigns combined. So it's the sort of situation where no matter how well they've done to get to the Champions League semi-finals and potentially got to a Coppa Italia final as well, we look forward to that second leg against Juventus. And I hope Romelu Lukaku shuts those racists up who were, you know, being horrendously racist to him in the first leg. But we're in a situation where you really, really, really wouldn't be surprised if Simone Inzaghi did lose his job. And you could argue that he hasn't even been that hard done by if they do. If I was the Inter Milan hierarchy and I had all this change going on in my squad, I'd go for the continuity of keeping him for at least another year. But maybe that's my family roots coming out and talking to me there.
I've also written down some names for managers. Now, I know Nagelsmann is pretty linked to Spurs. I would suggest Enrique, and then there's also the possibly crazy appointment of Simeone if he leaves Atletico, because he has the links to the club, as we know from the past, and a very wild shout, which I think is crazy, hasn't gotten a job yet, Adi Hütter.
Yeah, I mean, Adi Hütter was particularly effective at Frankfurt, of course. It didn't go so well for him at Gladbach, but I do appreciate his work. Also, has played in a similar sort of system to Simone Inzaghi. So not the worst shout. I think Luis Enrique and Nagelsmann are too ambitious, to be honest. I don't think they'll be particularly attracted by the project, given the sort of financial chaos going on behind the scenes. Do Inter want to go and employ some, Diego Simeone? I know it'd be a great challenge for him. I mean, is he in the mix for any bigger jobs this summer? Probably not. Even if he, and there's also no guarantee that he will even leave Atleti, given their current run of form has been brilliant. So up until that game against Barcelona at the weekend, at least. So I don't think it's going to be Diego Simeone. I don't think it's going to be Luis Enrique. I don't think it's going to be Nagelsmann. It could be Adi Hütter. I think Vincenzo Italiano is a good bet as well at Fiorentina. I know he's got loads of plaudits since taking over there. The way he's dealt with the exit of Vlahovic, of course, was quite inconsistent in the first part of this season, but has really picked up recently. They're still in the Conference League, I believe, as well. So, yeah, Vincenzo Italiano is probably the guy I would go for.
Everybody watches Serie A, mentions him to me, and lauds him. I think he'd be a good fit if he can take that step up. Now, I'd like to leave you with two personal questions. And that is, do you think Inter can win the UCL? The first one, a footballing one.
Oh, I like it. I like it. It would be an amazing story. And I hope whichever of the Milan clubs makes the final, makes it a competitive final, they do go in against either team, Real Madrid or Man City, as enormous underdogs. I would even say Inter are slight underdogs against Milan, and I know that will annoy some Inter fans, but I think the best players on both sides, if you pick between them who's in better form right now, you've got to go with Rafa Leão and Milan. I think he's been sensational in recent weeks. So I think that gives Milan the advantage going into these enormous, enormous ties. Having said that, Simone Inzaghi has done very well in cup competitions, as I keep on saying, and they probably had, up until the final few minutes, the better performance across two legs in the quarterfinals. I thought Milan slightly rode their luck, particularly in the first leg against Napoli. So I can see Inter making it, but at the moment I put Milan as favourites.
Right. And the last one is a personal one. And that is, what is your favorite type of cheese?
Favorite type of cheese? Great question. I love brie. I really do like brie. I also just like Parmesan. It's great. It's flexible. My girlfriend just went to Milan actually a couple of weeks ago for a work conference and picked up this huge lump of Parmesan. I've just pretty much been putting it straight in my mouth, not even on pasta or anything. But it's very good on toast. It's great. Camembert is also delicious. Baked camembert, dipping, you know, bread in that, etc. Put a bit of oil on top. Absolutely sensational. Put a bit of rosemary on there as well. So yeah, not the most interesting shouts or unique choices, but I really like, manchego is actually very good as well. I don't know whether you've ever had manchego. So yeah, those four, I kind of gave you a spread.
Well, they're always best in a spread. And since you mentioned Parmesan, do you know that they have the Derby of the Cheese in Italy between Parma and Reggiana, the two cities whose name is Parmesan cheese from?
I love that. I didn't actually know that it was called the Derby of the Cheese, but yeah, I'm wanting to do more of Italy over the next few years. So yeah, going to that Derby of the Parmesan of the cheese would be definitely on my bucket list.
If you're ever sitting at midnight watching your phone and not being able to sleep, I'll send you the recent videos I did on Syria. Dugi, I won't take please up do. Any more of your time. You've been a great guest. Thank you so much for coming on. Please tell the people who are living under a rock where they can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. So come and check us out on Football Daily and Euro Football Daily on YouTube. You can listen to me on various shows on there. If you want to follow me on social media, it's Dugi Critchley on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, etc. So yeah, get involved. But yeah, thank you so much for having me on the podcast today. I've really enjoyed it. And hopefully Inter can cause a bit of history this season on the pitch and not completely collapse off it.
Thank you so much for coming. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back from our break to discuss PSG and their recent trials and tribulations. There's no one better to talk to us about that than an European football expert, namely EuroExpert. Hi.
Hey, man. I'm happy to be on and happy to talk about PSG.
Thank you so much. It's not going to be a happy discussion, however, because we'll start right into the depths of it with PSG's lack of faith in youth. Now, over the years, they've had this Galacticos project of buying players and signing big name players on free contracts like Messi, Donnarumma, Ramos most recently. The main gripe of the fans and people who support other clubs is that they don't push through youth players despite being basically kings of a region of France who has produced amazing talent over the years. Can this change with the shift towards Luis Campos as the new footballing director?
Yes, I think it can change. We're starting to see it change as well this season with the promotions of Elchdil, Bichiabu, and one was Zaire-Emery. Zaire-Emery was, of course, played in the first quarterfinal leg against, but it was round of 16 leg against Bayern Munich, forgetting at what point they played. And yeah, that was a brave move by Christophe Galtier, and it's probably something that PSG needs to do more of, entrusting their youth to play in the bigger games and just play at all. I mentioned off camera before as well how last year under Pochettino, my opinion, PSG's worst defence was not using youth, even when they'd already killed the league. Like Xavi Simons, I think, had to wait until January to make appearance in the Coupe de France. And then even after PSG were knocked out, he still wasn't starting games alongside Michu. And it was just a case of Pochettino, what are you doing? What is the point of trying a Mauro Icardi over these guys? And that's the attitude the PSG have sadly fallen into at times. Like Christopher Nkunku and Moussa Diaby leaving for game time as well, when they were played, like even under Tuchel, who clearly wanted to promote youth, they were played as a sort of young, they played as like 10 starts a league season. And obviously they're going to want more. But hopefully with how young these players are coming through and how early they're being integrated into the first team, that's going to change.
You mentioned those players leaving. Another huge name that is left is Kingsley Coman, who has ended up being the bane of PSG's existence, contributing to their knockout this season and also most famously scoring the goals in the final. Now, the main thing about PSG is they have a chance of becoming the premier French team whilst playing the best French players. Because in their, let's say, iconography, everything features the Eiffel Tower, their motto is Ici c'est Paris. That means this is Paris, or here is Paris. Might make a fool out of myself with this one. But is this real change, or is it just some players getting minutes and then moving away and then maybe possibly knocking out PSG in the future, because they still have Messi, Neymar and Mbappe there who will, I don't think, will ever accept not playing ahead of a youngster.
Yeah, I think this is a long-term question. It depends on the recruitment that Campos does. If Campos signs like some more, you know, Galacticos this summer, then obviously like a Galactico midfield, Roberto Emery is going to look at that and go, well, I'm obviously not going to play football, so what is the point of me being here? I'm going to leave. And I think that has been the point at which previous PSG players have checked out. Like Hugo Ekitike this season, he's not going to get another Neymar, Messi and Mbappe. He's been like forced into this target man mold, which he's never really been. What's the point of him being there, right? So I think on this question, it does depend on how they can how they can build these youngsters into the team long term and show them that, like you said, rather than just handing them token minutes.
And the main gripe of the fans is this lack of, let's call it, club culture. Because looking across Europe, you see Bayern, they are formerly Bavarian, formerly German. They might not have an entire team made out of youth products, but they usually buy up the youngest German players at a very young age and then keep them at the club. So that feels like their home. Now, these gripes have been there for years with PSG supporters, and now a huge new one has been added on top of that, and that is Christophe Galtier's recent comments. Now, what can you tell us about those, and what's your opinion on them?
Oof, yeah. These comments, I don't want to repeat them word for word, because I've had very controversial, very, very offensive to a lot of people, particularly Muslims. Yes, if you're sort of unaware, Galtier has been exposed recently, a report by Romain Molina, by elite's email talking about Galtier from his time at Nice, where he was allegedly against the signing of Islamic players because he had qualms over the... I think his reasoning was he didn't want players practicing Ramadan because he felt they wouldn't be as fit, but his overall comments seemed to kind of go past that. And it really came a terrible time for him, because he started the season at PSG really well, I felt. I remember I was going through some tweets the other day about Pochettino at PSG, and one of the last ones I tweeted about his time at PSG was in August 2022, where I said Galtier has shown Pochettino up here because his start to the season has been blistering compared to what Poch's was. And sure, it began to dry up in January, Galtier's form, but you could put that down to like a really imbalanced team, having to deal with Messi, Neymar and Mbappe, and like injuries at the back and in midfield, having to change away from the back three that had been working. Then the Champions League happened, PSG were kind of embarrassed, and now these comments have come out, and it's been like a double whammy. And I'm quite shocked PSG have stuck by Galtier. I guess they're kind of against sacking a manager mid-season. Obviously, Tuchel's the only one who suffered that fate, I believe. So they'll probably change in the summer. I think that's probably the right move, because as much as we're kind of seeing, we're seeing a lack of reports coming out of the PSG dressing room, I bet it's very divided over what's come out in the press. Personally, we've spoken about how PSG need to integrate youth. I think they need to stop the attitude of chasing Champions League year after year after year. Doing that just means you're always building for the short term, which means you're always unequipped for the long term. I think they need to bring in a manager who is given the time to create a PSG team that's not been hashed together over a year or two, and instead build something that's 3 or 4 years old. That's like a Liverpool. Like when Liverpool won the Champions League in 2019, Klopp hadn't just taken over the year before. He'd been there since, 2015? He'd been there 4 years. Like, that team was a pet project of his. You could see his fingerprints all over it. And that was the reason they managed to go all the way to the final. Same with Pochettino as well, on the other side at Tottenham. He was given years to institute his ideas. And that's how he managed to build a team that got to Europe's Premier Competition's final, right? PSG, I think the closest they've got to that was Tuchel given like 2 seasons And I think that was more because he was a really good manager and he had single legs to play off of. So PSG needs to get a manager who's able to do that. And I don't know who that is. I think Nagelsmann probably isn't quite ready for that. And he looks like he's going to Spurs. Pochettino is a write-off for PSG. We'll see how he does at Chelsea. I think Zidane sends the wrong message. I think that's another coach who's in to win trophies now and tries to make the best of what he has. That's not to say he's a great tactician. I just don't think he'd like to promote youth. So I off the top of my head, I'm really struggling with ideas. Maybe they should go for Franck-Heinze of Lens if they want to promote from within. But as seen with Galtier, it might not work out.
The step up might be too high and they might not be patient enough with this type of manager to keep him in the job. One thing I'm seeing constantly is that Carlo Ancelotti might leave Real Madrid. Could he be like a shoehorn for 2 years, maybe win the Champions League, and then wait until the right project manager comes along?
I think if you're bringing Ancelotti in, he has to be your last attempt at this. But I'm even sort of against that. I mean, Ancelotti's obviously been at PSG before. I don't know. I think that's just another short-term option. I don't think Ancelotti's going to be promoting the youth that PSG fans will be pleased by. I genuinely think that PSG fans would take being knocked out in the round of 16 of the quarterfinals if it meant, like, by the end of the season, players in their top 10 for minutes were a Warren Zeremi, Abishabu, Timothy Pembele. Like, if these players were the ones getting minutes and you could see their progress throughout the season, I think the depression levels would be far lower in April 2024 than if Ancelotti tried to get this team, even without Messi, to a Champions League final and probably got knocked out because it's still an imbalanced team that's still not really got a lot of chemistry. I think that that would hit a lot harder. So I'm even slightly against that.
You talked about the fans, and it's an interesting discussion here because I feel like the fans' will and what the fans desire is not at the forefront of this club, because their leadership didn't buy this club as a passion project. They bought it for their specific reasons of projecting soft power and basically sports washing. Do you think they can understand and completely grasp the fans' wishes to not just go for the biggest name, not just have the biggest, shiniest things as they usually do? They do this with cars, they do this with luxury palaces, they do this with... This is how they project outwards into the world. Appointing someone let's say Adi Hütter, who can build a great squad, would be a huge step down for them, but might pay dividends in the long run. Do you think that they can truly have this culture shift inside of the team?
I think the time's come where I think they recognize they have to. I've read comments before from El Khalifi, and I think by bringing in Luis Campos, that was a step in that direction. I don't think he would have arrived had they not been considering going down this route, especially since of the rumours that after the World Cup in Qatar, PSG's owners wanted to step down their investment a little bit. And I don't think you bring in Luis Campos to negotiate the best deals for the best players in the world. I think you bring in Luis Campos to unearth the next best players in the world, to get your next Marco Verratti's, that sort of thing. So I actually think they are heading in this direction.
And speaking of the best players in the world, three of them are currently at the club with their futures riddled with question marks. And I want to start off with Messi, because he is aging out and his contract is expiring this summer and everybody's talking about him rejoining Barcelona. Apart from whether do you think those rumors are true or not, would you let him leave as the PSG leadership?
Oh, absolutely. I'd hand him over there. I'd drive into Barcelona myself. I mean, I don't be disrespectful to him. He's the best player in the world. One of the best players of all time. And he has been the best player in the world for the past decade. But he's a hindrance to this PSG team. He has these moments of magic, but at the end of the day, he means PSG have to park eight men behind the ball or seven men behind the ball because the front three are not going to be able to defend as diligently as the midfield. And Messi, in my opinion, is the laziest player. Well, maybe not quite as lazy as Mbappe. He's closest to an Mbappe than a Neymar. My key memory of Messi, and maybe this is a bit harsh, was last season. I think it was a simple Ligue 1 game. Messi was on the pitch. Icardi had just come on. And Icardi wins a header around the halfway line and flicks it down to Messi about a metre away from him. And Messi just stands still, watches the ball slowly roll past him and goes to a defender. He very easily could have chased for it, but he just couldn't be bothered. And I think he's a suction on wages. I think he's done the job for PSG. He's brought some moments of magic. He's meant his arrival has meant PSG can say, we had Lionel Messi at our club. We're one of two clubs in the world to have held Lionel Messi. And now he's served his purpose and they should drive him back to Barcelona and watch Xavi try and ham-fist him into their team.
Just because I can hear Messi fans out there already sharpening their pitchforks and lighting up their torches. Messi would work if it was just him, right?
Yeah. Yeah, if you had nine men to carry the work that he's unable to do, sure. I mean, Argentina kind of showed that, right? But in the World Cup. But with Messi, with Mbappe and Neymar there, assuming one of them stays along with Messi, I don't think PSG let two of those three go. It's just going to be the same problems like it is every year.
Speaking of Neymar and his injuries, always maligned and depressed that he doesn't work hard enough, although that might not be entirely true, always gets injured around Carnival time and his sister's birthday. What do you think of him? Should he keep staying? Should he keep plugging away at the club, maybe to win that final Champions League with PSG, or should he go seek pastures new?
It's a tough question. I think I really feel a lot of sympathy to Neymar. I think every bad moment he has is highlighted in the press, and rarely does the casual football fan see his good moments. I think he's come to symbolise a lot everything wrong with PSG, right? But I think he's actually one of the harder working players, one of the harder working superstars at the club. That obviously doesn't take away from his mysterious injuries around Carnival time and his sister's birthday. But I don't want that to be the only thing he's remembered for. Especially under Thomas Tuchel, Neymar had an argument to be right up there with Lewandowski and Messi as one of the best players in the world. But my answer would be, Neymar should do what he feels like doing. If he feels like staying at PSG, if he can mature, he can be he can genuinely help people there. Xavi Simons, for example, said one of the best things about being PSG was Neymar treating him like a little brother. And he said he'll be eternally grateful to everything Neymar's done for him. That's Xavi Simons at PSV now, right? If he can have that effect on every youngster, that's going to make a better future PSG team. And if they do eventually win that Champions League with him, I think that'll be a really big crowning moment in his career. And I'd hate to see him go out without winning it at PSG. But if he doesn't feel like it anymore, I know we've spoken before about being depressed with football and not really feeling the urge to play. If he wants to stop, he should stop.
I love that you mentioned that story because I think it's so opposed to the classic image that everyone's putting out there of Neymar, of the showboater, arrogant ne'er-do-well who never tracks back and never helps his team. Another player who is slowly but surely steered into that conversation is Kylian Mbappe. Now, I haven't read anything on him because I find following huge superstars boring. So I'm going to give it over to you to tell me what exactly is his situation, because last summer he was all ready to leave and then they basically made him in charge of the club, giving him powers well beyond any that a footballer should have.
Well, that's if you believe the rumours. I, from what I've seen, I don't think there's been anything concrete about that. I think a lot of those first stories that came up about Mbappe being PSG sporting director, they came from Madrid-based outlets, which I would take with a giant pinch of salt, considering he just rejected Real Madrid. And I think Mbappe's begun to frustrate PSG fans a little bit. Had he not had such an incredible World Cup, I think there might even be some boos for him at the moment, just because I speak to a lot of PSG fans, a lot of French football fans, and they all agree that Mbappe's become extremely lazy with defensive work. I've read books on his youth, how he's come up, and a lot of people say, I think Matt Spiro's book about him, say that even as a teenager, he was very weak with his defensive work. And I think part of it is tactic. It's helpful for him to hang on the halfway line so he can blast forward on counters. But with the moaning about the tactics in public, low understandable about not wanting to be like PSG's target man, you don't do it on your Instagram story. I think we're at a crossroads with Mbappe. I think he's the best player in the world at the moment. But another season of underachievement from PSG and Mbappe having some flaws to his game could see tensions flare. Personally, I just hope he leaves French football on a high.
Right, so since we're on the subject of expiring contracts, Hugo Ekitike will be going back on loan to Rams and in July 2023. Can you tell me what has his time at PSG looked like and is he worth keeping?
It's been frustrating. At Rams, he was a he was more of a poacher. He wasn't really involved too much in build-up play and link-up play. He's even sometimes someone to turn in behind and run in behind, and he was a very good one-touch finisher. And at PSG, in order to facilitate Kylian Mbappe, he's been used as someone to bring down high balls and try and back into defenders. And he may be tall, but he's very young and he's not very well built. And he's really struggled at that early in the season. Around the midpoint, around January, he had a good spell. I think he scored 5 goals in 6 games, which contributed to that, with more of what we saw at Rams. But I think we've barely seen the best of Hugo Ekitike, and I don't really think that's been in his control. I remember watching him at Rams last season, and I thought, this is one of the most talented forwards I've ever seen. That some of the things he was able to do in front of goal, his composure was scary. And I think PSG should try and keep him, say sorry, and work on how they can fit him into the team in a better way than the mess they had this season.
Right now, we're in this situation, and I'd like you to assume the role of a decision maker inside PSG. Let's just assume that this change with Luis Campos, with promoting youth, isn't just in order to appease fans and they'll keep buying superstars in order to project power. We're talking a new manager, a Messi replacement, possibly an Mbappe replacement, a new right back or right wing back if Hakimi leaves, and a new center back for Ramos's role, which is really hasn't filled in, but we'll search for a replacement. Now, I know you have a wealth of scouted players in your videos. I'd like to go bit by bit and position by position. Could you outline an exciting youngster for us to sign? And we'll start off with the big one, the Messi replacement.
Oh, goodness. I would go with... I'd try and bring back Xavi Simons. I know PSG have a buyback clause under 20 million euros. I know Simons has to agree to it, but he's been electric for PSV this season. He's got, I think, 20 goals and assists in the Eredivisie. He scored a penalty against Ajax. I think it might have been last weekend or weekend before. He's so good in forward areas. I'd love to see him come back to PSG. I think that'd be a great return for him. And especially if they let Messi go and then bring him in, I think he'd be convinced on game time.
I didn't know about that release clause, but if it's under 20 million, it basically is a no-brainer. In the case that Mbappe moves away, who would you bring in? Obviously, his shoes are too big to fill. Would you stick with Ekitike or would you bring in some help up front?
I'd try and bring in someone who's got... I think Mbappe's best asset for PSG, well, one of his best assets, is his acceleration in tight spaces. A defence can drop as deep as their 6-yard line, and Mbappe can take 2 yards of space, burst into it, drag everyone all over the place, just how quick he is. So that PSG would need to bring someone in that quick and they're able to exploit those spaces. Off the top of my head, it's a tough one to think of at the top of my head. I'd be thinking it's someone like an Ousmane Dembele, but his injury issues are a huge, huge problem. Trying to think of anyone in France, possibly. It's a it's a tough one. It's a very tough one, that one.
I'm going to help you out. I was thinking someone like Lois Openda or Randall Colomwani.
Oh, Lois Openda is a fantastic shout. That is exactly what I'd be looking for, actually. Yeah, that's Lois Openda, that'd be it.
Okay, and last but not least, it's Ramos's turn. He's leaving, obviously. I don't think anyone would keep him at the club. Who do you see partnering Kimpembe at the centre of defence?
Oh, we'd be looking then at a right centre-back in that regard. Ooh, it's tough. I'd be looking for someone quick, because it will help PSG play a high line and try and press other teams. I mean, they're bringing... I don't know if it's going ahead still, but I think Milan Skriniar, I think it's worth saying, I think he'd be a nice signing for PSG. He's not necessarily the quickest, but he's quite a good presser. He's been more suited to a back three, but I think he could suit a back two. And he brings a good amount of experience as well, while not being really old. So I think Milan Skriniar, who they've already been linked to a lot, if they do get him in, I believe, on a free in the summer, I think that'd be a really good move.
I was thinking about him as well. He seems like a great buy, and as I've outlined in part one, Inter not tying him down to a contract is absolutely criminal. At the same time, we still need a person who can guide this disparate group of players and these legacy players, because they've been assembled by a number of managers. Is there anyone out there who you think would be fit? Because obviously Galtier is insane.
I'm going to look at Transfermarkt's free agent managers at the moment. If there's anyone about, off the top of my head, it's like I said, Nagelsmann, from what we saw happen at Bayern, which is a good reflection of PSG's like politics. I don't think Nagelsmann's ready for it yet. There's Antonio Conte, but he's way too suited to the short term, and he's got a terrible record in Europe, so he's also a no. I think the free agent market's really bad, to be fair. So I think you're then looking at poaching a manager from another team. And there's very, very, very few I'd be looking at. Like, it's a very left-wing shout, but someone who just spoke out to me, who I've quite liked watching, is Simone Inzaghi at Inter, which seems like they have a dodgy shout because they're outside of the top four at the moment. The fans are a bit torn over Inzaghi, but at the same time, he's won the Supercoppa Italia this season. He's gotten to the Coppa Italia final, and he's gotten to the Champions League semi-finals. He's got a very, very, very good record in knockouts competitions. He's already won a Coppa Italia twice before this, and he plays a nice progressive style with three at the back, good passing style, and Inter squad isn't the best this season. I don't think it's ridiculous to say they shouldn't have been aiming for the title. The top four is what they should be going for. If they don't get it, that is bad. But Simone Inzaghi might be a left-wing shout. He might struggle to command respect in the dressing room, but he's sort of the mould I might be going for.
That is an absolutely great shout. I love it. And, I mean, you shouldn't think twice about it, because his record speaks for itself. He won Serie A, and as you said, he is currently sitting in the final of the Coppa Italia, maybe the final of the Champions League. Now, I'd like to end with two questions on a personal level, one footballing and one unrelated. On a footballing level, what do you see with PSG? Is there a true shift? Will they become an exciting team of youngsters who truly represents Paris, or will they just keep plugging away with superstars? Because even though they hired Luis Campos, as many clubs out there prove, football clubs are pretty stupid sometimes.
Yes, they are. I would say they are going to start blooding young Parisians, because they're going to learn from a decade of mistakes. Ligue 1's teams are putting pressure on them now, because the quality of the league's improved dramatically. Like, I think there are brains in that club that know if they keep going on the curve they are, a Lens will challenge them for the title. A Marseille will seriously challenge them for the title. If a Lyon keep getting their shiz together under Laurent Blanc, they'll end up like putting a bit of pressure on PSG. And slowly but surely, there'll be a lot of teams that take points off them and make the superstar club look more toxic. And they know what the fans want. They want their own Parisian talent. It also saves money. I think that's the direction they're going.
For the sake of PSG's leadership, unless they want to be driven out of the club in, let's say, 5 years' time, I hope you're right. On a personal level, and with that, we'll end this show. What's your favorite type of cheese?
That's fun. I do not have a favorite type of cheese. I've never eaten cheese.
You've never eaten cheese?
How and why? I have a eating disorder called ARFID, which means I haven't tried many foods. I've eaten about 20 foods in my life. It's like a thing where my brain is, it's got like a food phobia. So if you give me something I've never tried, I just would not try it. I would just say, no, I'm not having that at all. So I've never had any cheese. I've never had any McDonald's, never had any sort of fast food like that. Never had any like pasta or anything like that. There's not many things I've eaten. So your answer was more than you bargained for, sir.
Yeah, I really was not expecting that answer.
Well, you got an exclusive, man.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been eye-opening to see how the Euro expert sees PSG's future and its present. Tell the good people who are listening to us where they can find you.
Or you can find me on Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube at EuroExpert underscore. At EuroExpert underscore on Twitter, at EuroExpert everywhere else, where I've managed to get the app for myself. You can find me there. You can message me and email me asking me about football, and I'll be sure to reply.
Thank you so much for joining me. I'll let you get to your 20 foods, and I would love to have you back on again anytime.
Thank you, man. It's been a pleasure.
And thus, we come to the end of another episode. I have been your host, Edward. You can find my work at @he_ftbl on TikTok and Twitter. Thank you so much for breaking the lines, for providing me with this platform. Thank you to our producer, Lewis, and you can catch us next time.